You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
Adnan Solanjo has been teaching science for over 25 years. He started as a science educator at Questacon in Canberra and has since gone on to work at the Edinburgh Science Festival. He's run science shows at the United Arab Emirates. He was a co-founder of the Children's Discovery Centre, which ran out of Western Sydney for quite a while. And he's been running an electronics outreach company called MadLab in Australia too. Look, he's a busy guy, and in this session we get into talking about how he's been putting science for preschoolers into Australian libraries, as well as heading up the Early Start Discovery Space out of the University of Wollongong. In this we talk about not only teaching science, but also the importance of creativity and nurturing a discovery mindset. Plus, well, just because we can, we start talking about strange science experiments, including air pressure using cornflakes. Yep, demonstrating air pressure with cornflakes.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Physics Ed Podcast, and really looking forward to this one because I've been speaking with a good friend of mine for many, many years, Adam Solanjo. He is a science communicator of great standing. He's done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of science shows and workshops, not only in Australia, but in the UK and around the world, including Canada, China, Indonesia, New Zealand, South Africa, all over the place. And look, I'm really looking forward to this. Adam and I get into talking about how he's been working on his program called Little Bangs, which is a program for not only primary kids, but actually preschoolers from ages 3 to 5 and teaching science in libraries. We talk about his thoughts around creativity in the classroom and what allows kids to actually get excited and learn a bit about their world and their own way. And we also talk about the value of failure in an experiment. So look, stay tuned with this. I really am looking forward to it. And later on, we'll look at our top 3 learnings of the actual podcast, plus a whole bunch of tips and tricks that might actually help you around teaching creativity in your classroom. Anyway, without further ado, here's Adam Solanjo, who's the creative director of the Children's Discovery Museum, as well as heading up the Early Start program at the University of Wollongong.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Welcome, Adam Solanjo, to the Physics Ed Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for coming along, mate. I mean, I know it's been a very busy time, what with Easter long weekend, now Anzac Day long weekend, and the kids' holidays. Imagine you've been pretty flat out.
Yes. It's crazy, the school holidays. It's booking them into all sorts of exciting activities and then playing taxi for,
Yeah, that's right. You're doing daddy daycare today.
I'm doing daddy daycare. Well, actually, no, the kids have just gone back to school, so I did the drop-off and I don't have to worry about it until pick-up.
Yeah, it's our life. I think it's every working person's life these days. No, actually, yeah, you actually have had a bit going on. I only recently noticed that you launched something up in Newcastle only recently.
Well, that's right. So we've got this project where we're really trying to effectively upskill libraries and librarians in their STEM offerings. And we've initiated a project that started in Sydney with just one library and then expanded to about 25. And then we sort of got some inquiries further afield. But, it becomes quite time-consuming and expensive to send our people out to run these programs. So we sort of hit on the idea of perhaps we could train librarians themselves to deliver some of our junior programs. So we train them and, show them how they can get hold of the gear or buy from us simple materials. Then they'll be ready to run these things themselves.
This is fantastic. This is the Little Bangs program, right?
It is the Little Bangs program, and that's what just got launched in Newcastle just the other week.
How do you find working with, librarians are really, talented people with a lot of things they've got to juggle. They're almost like they're spinning plates all the time with lots of stuff going on. How do you find training them in STEM, particularly if they haven't got a background in it?
Well, it's interesting. It's a bit of a self-selecting audience. It's a bit like when you run science camps. You tend to get the children, in this case, you're getting the adults, who are actually generally quite motivated and keen to do it. So firstly, they're interested in doing it, and many of them have done something or played in the space already. Yeah, there is a genuine concern, both their side and ours, about sort of having a good science knowledge. And, of course, in an ideal world, you'd want to have people with science background delivering these kinds of programs, but that's not the world we live in, not yet. That is perhaps a wider ambition. So, look, what we do is we start with a program which we've called the Little Bang Discovery Club, and it's designed for preschool children, sort of between the ages of 3 and 5, and their accompanying adults. So the actual content is very much geared around the learning capabilities of young children and the abilities of non-science background parents, carers, to facilitate both when they're working with us in libraries and later at home. So it's a bit of a journey for everyone, which is fine. And it's, you know, the fear of not knowing is kind of taken away, because it's a shared journey and it's very kind of fundamental. So it's really, you know, to give the outline of the program, it's a 4-week program. It runs for an hour, you know, each week. And each session sort of builds on what's been gained from the previous session. And it's really the fundamentals of thinking scientifically. And it starts with just looking around the room and naming objects. And it's as simple as that. Then it's a kind of collecting bits and pieces, collecting items together and sorting them. You know, if we've got bits of wood or bits of plastic, bits of toys, bits of things from nature, or just coloured paddle pop sticks, we encourage the children and we encourage the adults with them to sort these materials in any way they like. And that's getting across the notion that there's no right or wrong way of doing this. It's just a kind of personal choice and or what makes sense or what's going to be useful.
It reminds me of almost like a mini maker set up in some ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, these are all those basic skills which, you know, you'll see that once you start with a 3-year-old getting these skills of sorting objects out, you know, those skills get reinforced when they do the next kind of level of sophistication, 5 and 6, they go into science clubs and then, you know, do the maker movement. Those are the basic skills. And it makes it very accessible for these children, makes it very accessible for their adult carers, it makes it very accessible for the librarians, and actually gives everyone the confidence, hey, I can do this. I can think like a scientist. I can be inventive. I can make things. I can talk about what my ideas are. So the librarians are actually finding this something they can do, and it's not so prescriptive that they can apply any of the local conditions to their version of the Little Bang Club.
Little Bang is obviously taken off. I mean, you've got 25-odd libraries going on. You just launched up in Newcastle. I mean, it's clearly a need. Just out of interest, have you ever had to, you've got some interest from a library and they're really keen to go and they've had a bit of pushback within their own council, so maybe this is not our thing?
Look, it's interesting. Yeah, look, you get this. You get this in schools as well. I don't think I've seen pushback from the council level, but there has been some what I call really quite concerning remarks that we've heard back from, you know, maybe it's only one or two librarians, and I think in our garden, you know, one of them says something like, "Oh no, we couldn't possibly do science. That's way too highbrow for our community."
Well, what do you do about that?
Well, we kind of, after we recover from the shop, but, you know.
it does exist, though.
It does exist, and this is kind of what we're seeing in the wider community with this, you know, almost dislike of expert opinions and everyone's opinions the same, is that we kind of got to say, look, it's not science, and we deliberately don't call it science. It is a discovery club. So we've just got to do it by example. We say, look, let us come in and just do a session with a bunch of kids here and just give you a demonstration of what it is and how engaging it is. And you'll hear from the children, you get the feedback. And, you know, we take it as a very positive approach by saying, look, our view is that librarians are, in fact, you know, they are the gatekeepers to community knowledge, access to community knowledge and communication, because libraries are no longer this place of you just go there and you borrow some books or DVDs and then you leave, or you go there for the quiet space to do, you know, your HSC or, you know, just to access the internet for your own purposes. They have this, in our view, they have this really growing and critical role in communities to be a knowledge center. There's so much new information coming out. Libraries are an ideal place for people to gather and you know, not just receive. It's very two-way. You could actually bring in some of those so-called experts or strongly opinionated people, and there at that grassroots, that's where you can have these kind of conversations in libraries, supported by the kind of science clubs and makerspaces that, you know, are becoming more popular.
Look, these things are fantastic. You know, I kind of wonder, like, even just looking back over, like, Little Bangs is not the only thing that you do. I mean, you've been heavily involved with early start out of the University of Wollongong, science communicator at University of Sydney. You've been, you know, you run your own Mad Lab electronics outreach, Edinburgh Science Festival. I mean, just think of all this stuff that you've been doing. I mean, think back right to the start. I'm actually just interested. I mean, what made you think, you know what, I'm just going to be a science communicator, like right at the very start? Like, what said, I'm going to go join Questacon, I'm going to go start doing this stuff? Like, where did it come from?
Well, look, you know, in a way, you know, your home environment is so influential on your decisions. And there were no sort of lawyers or doctors or accountants in my family group. I just had scientists. My father's a scientist. My mother was a communicator. She was instructing tertiary students, on especially those from overseas, on how to improve the communication skills. You know, I was influenced by these cool things my father would bring home on the weekend, methylated spirits burning steam rollers and other bits and pieces.
You were really caught up right from the start, weren't you? You had no choice.
It was kind of there from the start. But, you know, I was also just I grew up in Canberra. I was naturally curious. I was out in the yard all the time, messing around with stuff, playing with stuff. And that kind of curiosity and inventiveness, you know, I loved Lego, still love Lego. The idea just to build with whatever you've got, kind of testing yourself, what's the best thing I can build with these limited resources? You know, isn't that the truth these days?
That's true.
You know, I was interested. I did science at high school, of course, and, you know, I wasn't very good at it, to be honest. I wasn't a great student, but things that interested me, I did well at. And so when it came to choosing a university degree, because there was no choice, I was going to university, I chose science subjects, but I chose things of interest to me. I wasn't sort of steering myself in any direction at all. What was interesting, though, is that year 10, 11, Questacon, which is still in the old primary school at that stage, was running public lectures. And my father was interested in that, and he was dragging his two sons along. And they didn't really get a lot of it at the early stage, but by the time I was sort of in year 12, year 11, you know, I was understanding these lectures and, you know, they were interesting. My parents had a secret plan to introduce me to a peer group that would not be involved in, you know, anything untoward. You know, Questacon invited all the young, or anyone basically, said, look, if you've attended a whole bunch of these lectures, you're obviously very interested in this, and, you know, we're inviting you to come and train as an explainer at Questacon and when we move to the new building. And that's what I undertook.
Right.
So I was an explainer on the floor of Questacon for my 3 years of my time at the university.
What was your favourite thing there? I mean, Questacon's like, you know, for those people who don't know, it's our National Science Museum here in Australia, and it's got a lot of cool stuff in there. I mean, all these different floors are different things. I mean, what was the one like, oh, great, I've got this one, awesome? What was the one that you go, this is going to be a good day?
Well, yeah, the funny thing about Questacon is that, you know, they threw together, you know, a whole bunch of like-minded people, and we ranged in age from sort of 16 up to, you know, 96. So there was this amazing pool of young people who were trained by Mike Gore, Dr. Gore, who was sort of the guy who started Questacon, you know, in the 80s, trained by him and effectively empowered to explain how everything basically worked at Questacon. So there we were, sort of 17-year-olds, and we were explaining the physics of, you know, the Foucault pendulum and biological slides and earthquake machines. I mean, there were literally hundreds of, you know, interactive science experiences that we were trained to explain, but also trained to to tell people which when we didn't know things that we didn't know them. So that was the real buzz. And it was always a big back to that kind of Lego stuff. You know, throw anything at me, I'm going to give it a go at explaining it, even if it's just how to use it.
You know? Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's obviously in science communication role, you can easily get caught up with all the cool and the big and the wow and the big explosions and all the rest that goes on. But then again, for it's not always what happens out in class. I mean, you've done a lot of outreach over the years, going to hundreds, if not thousands of schools over the time. What experiment or two or whatever you can come into mind, they're going, you know what, this is just being run really well in class, which actually doesn't need much fancy stuff.
Yeah, look, you know, my training, you know, one as an explainer, I was explaining whatever was on the floor there. I then sort of got the opportunity to join the Shell Questacon Science Circus, which is this one-year graduate diploma in science communication. It's offered both by Questacon and the Australian National University. And at the time, it took 10 recent science graduates and trained us, you know, as explainers, but trained us in the art of performing science shows and taking those science shows out to schools. And because we're traveling in mostly regional, remote parts of Australia, we couldn't take really high-tech, fancy gear with us. And I think the most high-tech thing we took with us was a vacuum pump and dewars of liquid nitrogen. You know, still very cool stuff today. But, you know, we could give really effective science demonstrations from items such as bubbles, soap bubbles, and balloons, and straws. And it's really about the story that you weave. You know, you demonstrate the phenomena with this low-tech gear, but it's hitting curriculum mark, whether it's, the primary school, even HSC level.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, just even thinking about the bubble side of things, I mean, I was just running a holiday science program last week with kids on variable testing, and so we're just making which solution makes the best bubbles. And then we had to define what subjectively means a best bubble. So we had to work that bit out. Playing around with, we put salt in it, sugar in it, glycerin in it. What is it? And then there's the kids with a strong observational bent who will look at it and go, oh, look, there are rainbows. Why are there rainbows in these bubbles? And so you could really deep dive into it. Actually, no, there's a science museum up in, I think it's like the Malaysia or somewhere in Southeast Asia that teaches molecular bonding using bubbles. Is that what you can do?
That's right.
That's fantastic. I mean, so what's just think about all the different stuff you've seen around. I mean, what's the funniest thing you've seen happen in the classroom? Like something's gone a little bit left of field and we're just going to run with it.
Yeah, well, I think children mucking around with, you know, they want to emulate what you've done. And so you go and you're doing your science shows and they're going, all right, well, now you've done that, I want to kind of do the same thing there. You know, one of my favorites, and, you know, it's all good to make a mess in your own place. You go and make a mess in the schoolroom there. So we have this audio tube, which is this sort of long, it's about a meter long, it's sort of ribbed PVC piping, it's quite flexible, and you hold one end and you spin it around and it makes a lovely sound. And that's because the spinning end is effectively pulling the air up and the air vibrates in the tube and you're getting a sound. You go fast and you get one sound. You go slow and you get a low sound. And to demonstrate to everybody that there's actually air going up because you can't see it, you sit this tube, the still end that you're holding, over as like a bowl of cornflakes or something like that.
Cool.
And the cornflakes go and it sprays around and then we, of course, you know, in some of these schools, you say, okay, guys, we've got a whole bunch of these. Come out here and give it a go yourself. So, you know, 8 kids out there, each with, you know, a packet of cornflakes, and they're just running around the place, spraying cornflakes everywhere.
That is awesome. I mean, I know those tubes. We've often just blocked the end just with our hands, but cornflakes, I mean, that's quite cool. You could almost try all sorts of stuff. You get quite nasty too. I suppose you could use glitter.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's what sort of going with it. So the kids got creative, inventive. They were trying to, can you get rocks going up there? Oh, no, the rocks didn't work. Little pebbles, no. Lisa, yeah, you could. No, don't. No.
It's very staticky. We deliberately ended warn people. So we're going to just see what happens. And yes, we're prepared to clean this up. We were running a Van de Graaff generator experiment and we thought, let's just see what happens when we put glitter into a cup and turn the Van de Graaff generator on. Yes, it does exactly what we thought it was going to do. Up and everywhere and quite sticky.
when a prediction comes true.
Yeah, it is awesome. Actually, I love those lessons where the kids just go, let's do this and let's do this. And then by the end of this lesson, you're thinking, okay, we've got our outcomes, but gee, we went down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, look, I get the, I mean, the greatest thrill is when those kids start being creative. You've sparked something in them and they go, oh, right, so I wonder if I do that. I mean, it's always helpful if they actually try and explain what their thinking is before they do it. But otherwise, you know, I do another program, as you mentioned, the MATLAB electronics workshop. And you know, the general program is, you know, here's your bag of components, follow the instructions and placing everything into the board the right way around. Here's how you solder. And those who are just going slowly and carefully will get through it in their own time. Those who have, you know, done it before quite quick, you know, get through it. And then you sort of say, well, now you can sort of deconstruct it and change things around. And that's when they get quite creative as well. Like, oh, so I don't have to follow exactly. No. But you've, you know, work out what you want to replace and what you think might happen. You know, different resistor or different lights or different, you know. And that's really cool. When they start saying, I'm going to do this, I think it's going to happen. Then for me, that's the outcome, because we're not just about, you know, the whiz bang. That's a great way to spark the interest. The ultimate thing is when the children, others, when they start thinking for themselves, when they really start, as you mentioned, that deep dive, they're thinking, they're innovating, they're going, I wonder if I can do that and this happens. And if, you know, of course, that's what you want to see people, you know, leaving university with, or not even going to university, just having that inventive, that curiosity, and you know, that's a great outcome for those guys.
And there's been a real movement towards this with kids, you know, getting them their curiosity going and letting them explore it. I mean, I wonder, have you ever come across a situation where you've just got these kids who are, I don't know, they've almost been trained since early on that, no, we're just going to fold the lesson scaffold and we're going to do that and we're going to finish and we're going to repeat to the point of, do you ever have a situation where the kids just coming up with something new that isn't guided by you is just almost unheard of? You know what I mean? Like have you ever had the situation where the kids just genuinely have a blockage to do this?
Yeah, look, a lot of the workshops I run are a bit like that. I mean, you know, I'd like to give them something that's quite challenging. I'm steer away from too much of the craft kind of thing. So there's definitely a place for it, you know. You're following instruction. You're making a water rocket powered car, and that's great. You know, they've made that. But what I'd like to see is, you know, offering a bit of the theory of saying, look, it comes out of problem solving. It's like, what I'd like to do is I'd like to move this car from this side of the room to that side of the room, and I kind of want to do it as fast as possible. And here's some gear for you to try and do that. And it may be a case of, here's an example you might have seen, and I can give an example. I've actually started using YouTube now because that's just cool. I was like, here's something that somebody else has done. I wonder if you could try and do the same thing. I'm not going to give you any more instruction than you've seen that and here's some gear, or you can try something different. And, yeah, look, a lot of children will struggle with that. They'll go, oh, but I don't know what to do. Yeah, you do. Just make something that's going to travel, you know?
But yeah, that fear of, what's the grade mark when you're going, there is no grade, just get it from one spot to another.
And the kids come and say, well, can you show me the final product? I'm just going to make it quickly and then I'm done. And that kind of annoys me. There is that kind of, you know, kids race through it and go, I've done it. Is this it? Now, that's not kind of the point. And I kind of want to tear them away from that. There's the end product. Here's the model. Copy that. And then you can go. It's like,
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things I've seen kids struggle with and is in a lot of science experiments is, quote-unquote, there was no result, so it's wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, no, the no result is a result. It doesn't do anything. That's an answer. You put it down, top marks, actually, if you say it doesn't do anything and you explain why. And actually, no, there's a little bit of research around this can actually come through even on the teaching side where people expect a result all the time. And so when they do an experiment and doesn't get a result, it's treated as wrong, which is not actually the case. It's just doesn't work. I mean, even if we speak right now, I was just trialing out different classic borax solution. Let's crystallize some stuff out on some pipe cleaners. So they're lined up on my windowsill right now. And I was actually just curious as to what is the minimum amount that you actually need to dissolve borax into water before it crystallizes out reasonably well. And I got several bottles that are just completely doing nothing. Now, if those kids were the ones that just got only that sample of borax and water and, you know, obviously heated it up to get a bit of a saturated solution, if not much comes out, they'll go, well, I can't do it. So therefore, you know, it didn't work. So I'm terrible at it. And it's not really the point.
It's an interesting, well, it's a fine line because at the end of the day, they are children and they do want to feel good about what they've achieved. And it's really important that at the end of their time with us that, you know, they feel good about what they've done. And if something is a failure, they still feel good because they've demonstrated to us and to everyone else that that approach is not going to give us what we want. But that is just as valid as somebody who's gone, oh, look, mine worked.
Exactly.
And you know, well, how did it work? What was different about yours? And they go, oh, okay, this is what we did. So, you know, a couple of things in that. Firstly, you know, that what we're doing is we're working collaboratively. And some people are working on this element of the experiment. Some people are working on that. But everybody needs to share their outcomes. Otherwise, nobody gets a result.
So yeah. Every now and then, though, I mean, I can imagine you're up on stage, you want this thing to work, and it's just not working.
Oh, yeah.
What's been the one of the ones where it's been an outright clanger? You've gone, I'm just going to explain my way out of this. There's no choice.
Yeah, humidity is the killer or the lack of.
Depending. Oh, static, yes.
Static, soap bubbles get killed and you're trying to do your big finale with a big, you know, half tractor tire filled with soapy water and you've got your volunteers standing in the middle and you're about to, like, pull them up and put a human inside a bubble and the bubbles have gone shy. They got stage shy. They're just not happening. That's probably the most difficult.
I can remember actually we had a few years ago, so we, you know, obviously do a lot of work around doing outreach stuff for physics, and we're doing a teacher PD with some teachers, and we're just going to show them how to do a cornflower slime, standard oobleck, pretty good fun. Problem is that it's part of sharing kits means you share problems. So the tub of so-called cornflower had been replaced by a tub of basically icing sugar, but they hadn't been labeled. So yeah. It was mixing away. And so in my rush at the time, just let's get into it. And it was very shiny and kind of gooey-ish, but certainly not the properties. And you said, look, okay, learning lesson, label your stuff. So basically we found out the label's been, you know, fallen off and just not someone had replaced it. But you imagine it's the silliest little thing can impact a lesson. In this case, it was 30 teachers. Does happen. So just thinking, if you had to have, like, I don't know, someone started with you at Little Bangs or whatever is, you've got a lot of projects around, just sort of started with you, or even if you're in a classroom and you had to give them some advice about just starting to teach science, what would you say?
Yeah, look, they're know your stuff, really. Just know what it is you are attempting to convey. You know, read about it, go to wikis, you know, look at YouTubes. So when things go wrong, and I say when things go wrong, you can talk your way out of it and you can say, and this is what happens when, blah, 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 and you can talk, and that is then part, it's a valid way to run a lesson because things are not always going to go right, and it's good if you can perhaps even say, hey, this didn't go right, who's got ideas, what did I do wrong? Sometimes in my shows and workshops, I will deliberately make things fail by deliberately leaving things out, because I want these people to be thinking. I also want them to understand that even a so-called expert, and they'll perceive me as that if I'm in front of the class, will get things wrong. And I think that's another, that research is coming out saying that's actually a really important factor, that people should understand that experts don't always get things right. But, you know, they're going to get it right more times than people who are not experts. So the idea of you know, failures are fine. It's okay. But if you're going to be doing this and you're going to be, you know, running lots of classes, practice. Just keep practicing it, because you've got to understand, you know how fast you might have to pour something, or where things are on your table if you've got to do things quickly, and laying things out the same way. It's like, you know, it's like any kind of performance, whether you're actually doing a show or you're just running a class session, knowing where your stuff is, labeling it correctly, and practice. Knowing your stuff and practice, I mean, you can't go wrong. Having good gear helps too.
Yeah, good gear is nice, but I totally agree with what you're saying. If you know your stuff, you can work your way around nearly anything. And we're human. Things go wrong and we work around it. It's perfectly fine. And actually, one of the things I'm really keen on having our guys keen on knowing is, just because you know what's in the box, if the box is missing, broken, half dent, whatever, something going on, there's always something else you can do. But you only know that if you take the time to learn.
Well, this is right. And this is the point we make with librarians. Like, they're basically... they've got our lesson plans. They've got some YouTubes of us presenting elements of it, so they can just get their little leg up to that first stage of just doing. And those who have got no science background, no experiences, they will just, and it's a bit like children at school, they'll just do what they've been taught. And it's so very important that we, as trainers of these librarians who then go on to train others, we've got to make ours as easily understood as we can, because we don't want to, you know, do the whole Chinese whispers kind of business of perpetuating an error. And then we do say, you've got to keep up, you've got to practice, because every time you do it, you know, you've got different audiences and they'll interact differently, and you just got to run with it and accept that is part of how the show, the workshop runs. And even from a time perspective, some things will take a bit longer with some children, shorter with others. There's always extra. And you can always, and again, you know, we find when we do this, the children are pretty much the same anywhere we do this across the country, if not across the world, and we do it across the world as well in parts. Children are pretty much the same, regardless of culture, economic background. Parents, similarly, those with science background, you know, they'll get into it and they've got all the right moves, but most of the parents and carers we're dealing with don't. And we create the environment where they ask questions. And so, it's really important that the presenter either has the skills to answer those questions, well, they will have the skills, either have the skills to actually give a satisfying answer as to what's going on, or says, look, I don't know that, but, hey, we're in a library. We can find the answer here.
Who would have thought?
And, you know, that, again, ties back to why we've identified libraries, apart from them being this, you know, every community pretty much has them, but they have all the information there. If it's not the internet, there's going to be books, and it's all age appropriate. You know, you can do it for your preschoolers, you can do it for your primaries, your secondary, your tertiary. There's information that you can access and get an answer to something which will meet your, you know, meet the needs, the age appropriate needs.
Which is the kind of thing that happens in real research anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Great. That's awesome. So just out of interest, obviously there are always timelines and all sorts of things and kind of things coming up. Is there anything coming up on the horizon that would be great to let people know about that's new and exciting, or something you're working on in the future? Anything new coming up?
Well, look, you know, our big push is really activating these libraries. So we're trying to, you know, engage libraries and any other sort of community centre that has people that, you know, is resourced to deliver these programs. They should get in touch with us and you know, we'll gear them up. Now, we're always working on, like yourselves, new activities. And because with more people now running programs, there's always going to be a demand for new things, you know, whether it's doing a rat trap racer or, you know, our treasures of the earth kind of activities, you know, visual illusions, things with wind. It, you know, we're always creating these activities. We're always improving them. And we're also working on some of the big immersive experiences. And this is the kind of activity that we put into the Early Start Discovery Space down in Wollongong. You know, we've got this house construction site, you know, it's a big, large wooden frame of a house, and we have tool belts and genuine tools, foam bricks, piping materials, carpeting materials, And this is an immersive experience for, you know, 20-odd children and their accompanying adults. They get to dress up as well. And there's lots of science and technology, engineering and maths in that program. So we've got a portable version of that. We've got an archaeological dig site, which is personally one of my favourites. So it's, you know, it's an authentic archaeology. This is not about dinosaur bones. This is about looking at evidence of human habitation and creating a story about the objects that are found in our pit. And we theme that to different environments or periods of time. And again, that's about children and their accompanying adults creating their own backstory to this site. You know, there's no right or wrong answer, as there is in science. There's no right or wrong. It's kind of a theory based on the evidence, based on the items you find. Read a story. And then the other sort of popular one, I've had a giant stomach for a long time, and I'm not talking about me personally. Although it's happening as well, the tour of the tummy is a program we've been running off and off for years. So again, it's got authentic sound effects, and we literally enter through the mouth, talk about digestion, talk about, you know, what is a healthy diet and exercise regime. Not to be preachy, but we just have a discussion, and of course, it's always exiting via the rear.
Well, actually, I've seen this really well done, actually. Kingswood High School, National Science Week, a couple of years ago, had set up their two adjoining labs, and that's exactly what they set up. And they put their models throughout various stages to describe the thing, and you're walking through these tunnels of crepe paper and sounds and things. It was fantastic.
Yes.
Which means you can do it on the budget. I mean, a high school has resources, but it's not as many resources as people always think. I mean, they've still got a tight budget like everyone else. And it was brilliant. I thought it was stunningly well done.
Yeah, and we encourage the copying. And the greatest joy I've heard of, like, archaeology is some daycare centre up in the back of Burke literally recreated their own archaeology dig. Another one regional created their own house construction zone. So you do these very low budget and get exactly the same learning outcomes.
Yeah, that's it. So it's all you need. It doesn't have to be the big super headliner all the time. Look, thank you very much for coming along. I mean, I know you've been very busy, especially coming into term two. There'll be people that want to get in touch with you. So how could they? What's your best ways of contact?
Look, in this day and age, of course, you've got everything from your LinkedIn to your emails to, yeah. So my email address is, the simple one is adam@madlab.org. And that will reach me anywhere. And otherwise, through the childrensdiscovery.org.au website is the best, or find me on LinkedIn.
Easy. And what we'll do is we'll pop that all in the show notes too as well. And, you know, any worries, just obviously get in touch with us and we'll hunt Adam down for you. All right. But look, much appreciated, mate. Look, thanks very much for your time. And look, all the best. We'll probably catch you up on stage doing another show or two reasonably soon.
Sounds good.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Wasn't that a great interview with Adam? He had so much to say and really quite valuable. I mean, he's been doing science outreach for many, many years. So my top three learnings. First one. Use librarians. I mean, librarians have so many resources in their library. I mean, it's not just about books. You have often a lot of craft materials. I've seen there's a library in Ryde, which has even set up a STEM space with digital microscopes and all sorts of things. So whilst, yes, librarians are very busy people, have a lot of stuff on their plate, but perhaps working with librarians, perhaps you can set up not just a science corner, but a mini maker space, maybe have some craft materials that kids could explore and use and engage with some lessons that could either be printed off with laminated sheets to for kids to study at their own pace, as long as they, of course, they've got to clean up. But that's the thing. Libraries have a lot to go with, and perhaps you can work with people like Adam with the Little Banks Discovery Club, or even in your local area, just set up something that the kids can use with your, not just your students, but across your community. Lesson number two. I think embrace failure is very much a key to for kids actually learning to be successful. Too often kids are too caught up with, I have to do this experiment, and the experiment is steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And if a step goes wrong, somehow the world ends. That's not really what science is about. It's about exploring, discovering, refining, and testing and testing until you either get what you hope to happen, or if nothing actually happens or you get a result that wasn't expected, well, that is a result. And it's quite important and get that going with your class to know that it's okay if something, quote unquote, doesn't work. There isn't a real such thing as that. It's why didn't it work? Or why did it do something that was unexpected? Some of the greatest discoveries in this planet have come from, well, just stuff that was not expected whatsoever. I would suggest one of them is penicillin. It was not expected that it would have these antibiotic properties, and it certainly has changed the world for the better. Top tip number three, create student-guided lessons. I mean, this has been a major thing in recent years anyway, but look, students, you know, they'll happily follow whatever your directions are in a particular given experiment, but if you've got enough time just to plan a little bit of free space, allow the kids to explore areas they're interested in. Is there a way that their rubber band racer or their diver they've created or whatever it is that you're doing, is there a way of changing it to do something different? This is the heart of the maker movement, where kids can, you know, create and build things that involve a little bit of art and a little bit of engineering put together to solve a problem. Allow the kids the space to, well, decide what is their solution for a given problem you've given them. And again, if they don't, you know, create a solution, that's fine. That's a learning, and perhaps they could spend some more time on that particular problem or learn from others in the class who did achieve a result. But no matter what, as long as the kids are right into the experiment and they're testing variables and coming up with their own hypotheses and predictions of what might happen, and they do a fair test and they get to explore their own creativity, they will do well in your classroom.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
So after that fantastic chat with Adam, I'd love to go through the Ed tip of the week. And in this case, how to create creativity in your classroom. Now, there's not that actually many steps you need to do. Obviously, you may be teaching various topic units in your classroom. However, regardless of what the topic is, get the kids a simple challenge for them. Provide a very broad challenge for the students to achieve. In this case, when Adam was talking, he was talking about getting a car from one side of the room to the other, but it could be a boat floating challenge. It could be a marshmallow tower challenge. But what you need to do is just give them a very broad challenge of create this, solve this solution, solve this problem within a set time frame. Make it a broad challenge, but give it a narrow time frame so they've got to achieve something that's, you know, reasonable. Now, the after giving them the challenge, give them as much access to materials as you can. In fact, it's very tempting to limit the number of materials. Say you get 30 straws and one marshmallow and X length of sticky tape to get the marshmallow highest off the room compared to everyone else. But what if you give them too many materials, like all sorts of stuff, almost to the point of where it's a Rube Goldberg machine, where it's some crazy invention just to do a simple thing? The idea being is that the more materials the kids have, the more likely they'll creatively come up with solutions for your problem. You see this a lot with egg drop challenges. By the way, if you have allergies, don't do egg drop challenges. Do a water balloon drop challenge instead, whereby they've got to get a balloon or a egg to survive a large fall. Obviously, from a science point of view, you can give them as many a set number of materials to get them to achieve this result, to get this egg or water bomb to land on the floor without popping. And each group should have the same materials from a science perspective. But if you're trying to just get pure creativity, give them heaps of stuff and just see what they come up with. Try and remove as many boundaries and rules as possible. Obviously, within safety reasons, of course, but the rules create conformity, and conformity constrains creativity. So wherever possible, try to reduce that a bit so the kids have a bit more leeway. And knowing this, get them to sort of think, what if? In fact, I'd be encouraging what if statements as many times in your classroom as possible, because just because you're saying what if, they'll kind of keep looking to you for the person who's going to ask the insightful question. However, there'll be kids in the room that, given a chance, they could create their own questions which kids could investigate. So even during an experiment, if kids suddenly go, I wonder if dot, 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 whatever it might be, let them explore it. I mean, unless it's specifically an assessment task, give them a chance to explore what they're actually interested in, and they will be well focused. Now, ideally, if they've finished their task, whether it was moving a car from one end of the room to the other or whatever it is, try to create some stretch goals. So you did this, well done. Can you do it with less materials, or can you do it if it's heavier, or what if I give you these materials instead? Whatever it might be, just because they've made their challenge work, stretch them, make them go further, and it can be quite good. Now, it kind of reminds me, when it comes to creativity, there's an old parable, effectively, like an anecdote that's been circling around the internet for many, many years. And in fact, a lecturer sent this to me, and actually our entire physics class, when we were discussing how to solve a problem. And in fact, if you want, you can even go check this on Snopes.com, which is simply, is this true? It's known as the barometer story, and there'll be a few listeners may be aware of it, but I'm just going to give an idea of this. Now, the idea was a physics degree had a simple question, which was, describe how to determine the height of a skyscraper with a barometer. Now, obviously, a barometer measures air pressure, and the intention was to get the students to work out, well, if the pressure is different on top of the skyscraper versus down at the bottom. Well, you could kind of work out the height of this skyscraper based on the pressure differences. However, the story, whether it's true or not, so it's pretty out there as to whether it actually occurred or not, but it's still a good story, is a student replied, you could tie a long piece of string to the neck of the barometer, then you could lower that barometer from the roof to the skyscraper, from the skyscraper down to the ground, and the length of the string plus the length of the barometer would equal the height of the building. Now, of course, that would cause a bit of an issue because they weren't after that answer. However, the kid, with the materials you gave them, answered the question. Now, of course, at this point, the student could, well, if they're not really wanting to answer the way that the teachers or the lecturer wanted to do, they could go into it further. I mean, for example, if the sun was shining, you could measure the height of the barometer, then set it on one end and measure the length of its shadow. Then you measure the length of the shadow, the skyscraper shadow, and you can kind of work out a bit of proportional arithmetic to work out the height of the skyscraper itself. That's a possibility. Or you could tie a short string to the barometer and swing it like a pendulum, first at ground level and then on the roof of the skyscraper. And the height can be worked out basically by the differences in the gravitational restoring force between the two. You could look at the emergency staircase. You could walk up and mark off the height of the skyscraper and barometer lengths, and you can just slowly walk down the staircase working out how high this actual thing is. The idea is that there may well be more than one solution to your classroom's problems, and some of the kids who might be even risking being labelled as poor performers, maybe they're just struggling with trying to answer it the way you want to answer want them to answer their questions. The more creative they are, the more likely they want to answer in all sorts of different ways because they can see lots and lots of solutions. So, Ed Tip of the Day, get creative in your classroom, but give them the leeway to do so.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
So that just about wraps up this episode. Look, thank you very much for tuning in on this. And look, if you want to find out for more information, just go onto the Physics Education website and type in creativity into the search box, and you will find a number of articles around this, which gets your kids exploring science in lots of creative ways. And as usual, it's Physics Education, spelt really badly, FIZZICS education.com.au. Not only will you find blogs and articles, but you will find over 100 free experiments, which will be really handy for those people trying to create some lesson plans for their classroom. Of course, you can check out the book, which is certainly handy. It's called Be Amazing, and How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love. And feel free to tune in next week. We'll be chatting with Isabel Kingsley from the Museum of Applied Arts and Sciences, formerly known as the Powerhouse Museum. Lots to discover there. And as always, please, if you take the time to go across to iTunes and leave a bit of a comment, we'll certainly respond to all of these. And leave a bit of a rating if you could too as well, because teachers are always after, you know, podcasts that might, you know, create a bit of value in their time in the car or walking the dog or whatever you might be doing. But it's nice if you can leave a rating. It means that it can certainly help not only us out, but your fellow teachers know that this podcast can help out. And as always, may your science lessons be fun, informative, and grab your students' imagination. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and we look forward to you next time at the Physics Ed Podcast.
been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.